Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to our Sunday edition of Atlanta's Morning News. I'm Scott Slade, here each weekday morning with the information you need to get ready for work each day. And on Sundays, we put aside this special hour so we can go in-depth on issues and stories important to Metro Atlanta. And a lot of people are concerned about violent crime, and rightfully so this time of the year. It's the season where crime tends to peak. There's more hours, more people have opportunities to gather, and there are more targets. Well, after a rash of violent crimes at Metro Atlanta gas stations, one DeKalb County commissioner is trying to do something about that.
I'd like to see mandatory 24-hour monitoring. I'd like to see through this legislation cameras at each point of entry and exit.
Mandatory. WSB's Jennifer Perry speaks with DeKalb Commissioner Lorraine Cochran Johnson about how her measure would also include cameras at gas pumps and cash registers, and requirements for lighting, picture quality, and even storing footage in case police need it. Let's listen.
So tell us about what this would require of these business owners in particular.
Well, what I'd like to see in DeKalb is, first and foremost, the data, the numbers, the science has told us that here in DeKalb, our highest incidence of violent crimes take place at gas and service stations. So at those locations, I'd like to see mandatory 24-hour monitoring. I'd like to see through this legislation cameras at each point of entry and exit. It also requires that there is a dedicated camera at each gas pump. It requires that we have proper lighting passages, that at every gas and service station you can see within a 75-foot periphery of that building. Also, probably one of the most important elements of this as well is that we now want to regulate the actual equipment itself. We are requiring that you have a minimum of a 4-megapixel camera that also has infrared night vision. Because when we arrive on site and there's a dead body in the parking lot, you know that a crime has been committed. But it does us no good to have footage that is not giving us the clarity we need to quickly apprehend individuals. So beyond that, it requires that any footage that's requested has to be turned over within 72 hours. And we also mandate through this legislation that you must store footage for up to 60 days, a minimum of 60 days. So these are the major elements of it. And I really believe that it can help us go a long way in fighting crime.
I believe I read in the AJC that the Georgia Association of Convenience Stores is actually supporting this. Are you getting any pushback at all from your local businesses? Because it seems like they would also want to help deter crime.
And, you know, Jennifer, you're absolutely right. I literally carried this legislation in to several of our gas and convenience store owners and managers, and we had the conversation. And businesses are concerned when they become a hotspot for crime. So I have been very grateful that I've not received any blowback. In many instances, what I found is there was a need for regulation. You know, people want to comply. They want to provide a safe environment because if one fails to do so, then it opens them for liability as well. So I was really happy to see that, you know, not only do we have our local associations that's rallying now behind this, but also, you know, I've had calls from several other jurisdictions and municipalities because we're all dealing with the same thing. And it's time we start to regulate cameras. It's time that we're clear on where they should be placed. And for me here in DeKalb, I'd even link your business license to it. If you do not have this technology in place, then you won't do business in DeKalb County.
DeKalb Commissioner Cochran Johnson's district covers the eastern half of the county. She's been working nearly 2 years on this legislation that would mandate every convenience store in unincorporated DeKalb all 236 of them to have a working video surveillance system. The measure is coming up for a DeKalb Commission vote soon. More on our Wednesday Atlanta's Morning News this coming week. Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens will join us to update his summer public safety plan that includes everything from positioning more officers at crime hotspots to youth programs. Looking forward to that. As Atlanta's Morning News Sunday edition continues, takeaways from the January 6th committee hearing this past Thursday night, CBS News chief election and campaign correspondent Robert Costa.
This committee, through its work, is trying to reveal new testimony, new evidence about what happened behind the scenes. In another way, though, it's also trying to reveal character, and it's become a reckoning for the Republican Party. Where do they go from here?
CBS congressional correspondent Scott McFarlane with us, and what he sees is the big takeaways from that January 6th committee hearing.
I think the broad theme was my big takeaway, that this was not inaction. This wasn't so much what the committee characterized as dereliction of duty. They're saying it was willful inaction, that the president was sitting silent willfully watching television while his supporters ransacked the Capitol. So much of what this committee has shown, especially last night, was about timelines. That is, the former vice president is having a near-death experience as his Secret Service detail is worrying about calling their families, thinking that they're about to die or be attacked. The former president's typing up the tweet, the 2:24 p.m. tweet, calling Mike Pence somebody who lacked courage, further fueling the fire and surging the mob. A lot of things are about timing, and last night we saw the impact of the timing.
Scott, did you hear anything at all that suggested the president tried to call law enforcement or order military officials to take some action during the riot?
Now, the committee said he specifically did not, that they've talked to witnesses, none of whom, says former president, took or made calls to federal law enforcement, to the military, to the Justice Department, to the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, or the District of Columbia's mayor, all of whom would have been relevant. The vast resources of the federal government are at his fingertips, and he didn't mobilize or marshal them. But there was something else, and this is something they touched on at previous hearings, indicating that Mike Pence was serving as something of a shadow president, making the calls or taking the calls of Defense Department officials when the former president would not.
And Scott, what's next? More hearings? When might we even get an interim report from this committee?
Sounds like they're taking a pause till September. This committee is becoming notorious for shifting the goalposts and their deadlines. They say, in so many words, they will reconvene in September. There'll be more hearings, more things to show. But what speaks to all this is this unique dynamic of a committee that is doing its investigation while it's showing its findings. It's simultaneously having public hearings, but still doing interviews, still doing intake. That's a unique situation. So the committee is reserving the right at a moment's notice to schedule another hearing if they think they found another blockbuster.
CBS congressional correspondent Scott McFarlane, thanks for the great work. Have a great day, sir.
Thank you.
There's a lot of excitement around WSB, our annual carathon for the Aflac Cancer and Blood Disorders Center at Children's Health Care of Atlanta is just days away. And the director, Dr. Doug Graham, sits down with us just to bring you and us up to speed on the wonderful things your donations have helped accomplish in the past year.
Yeah, well, thank you, Scott. And first, let me thank the listeners, the carathon every year, what it means to us at the Aflac Cancer and Blood Disorder Center and the support that you provide to the patients and their families. Let me give you just an update quickly on the clinical care that we provide at the Aflac Cancer and Blood Disorder Center. We now have 120 faculty that are really world-class specialists, and they are not only the specialists in the most common types of cancers, but we have experts in the most rare cancers available. So we're a referral center for patients throughout the Southeast and throughout the country. So as a matter of fact, if you look across the country, over the last 5 years, we've had patients from 43 different states that have come to us for cancer care. A second point to make is that we're leaders in research, and we want to be a center that can look for new therapies, new treatments that are better tolerated by our patients. And we do that by participating in clinical trials. So right now we have over 350 open clinical trials that patients participate in. And that's how we work with other centers across the country really to develop the best treatments for our patients. And the last point that I'll make is that we're a teaching center. We're a center that trains other physicians to be specialists in pediatric hematology oncology care. And every year, physicians from across the country come to us and train for 1 to 3 years to be able to go to other places across the country and really deliver world-class care. But we try to do all of this, I think, in a unique way, in that we keep the families and the patients in focus, that we try to do this in a family-centered way, and we have such great faculty and nurses and child life specialists, and we have social workers and dietitians and pharmacists and all that have this team that help us deliver the best care that we can to the patients.
Doug Graham, on behalf of all of our listeners, thank you so much for allowing us to come along here each year and to help you with this and your colleagues with this amazing work. Thank you.
Well, let me just thank you again, Scott, for all you've done for the many years that the Carathon has been in place, but also for the listeners and supporters of the Aflac Cancer and Blood Disorder Center.
Our annual Carathon for the Aflac Cancer Center is this Thursday and Friday on 95.5 WSB. We hope you listen, get inspired, hear about the wonderful, miraculous things that are going on in our own backyard here, curing childhood diseases that not that long ago were death sentences. You can get more information now and even make a donation if you like at WSBRadio.com. This story touched a lot of us this past week. The plight of the monarch butterfly, now officially an endangered species. Conservation biologist like Karen Oberhauser says the diminished numbers are the result of decades of new weed control methods.
And there actually used to be a lot of the monarch's host plant, milkweed, in corn and soybean fields. But as farmers changed their weed control methods, that milkweed disappeared.
WSB's Ashley Frasca also hosts Green and Growing on Saturday mornings. Well, we were talking about milkweed toward the end of the week. Is it easy to grow?
It really is, Scott. A lot of times you can often get free seeds, but there are seed packets available at the nursery, certainly, and you can even buy it as a perennial plant. That could run $10 to $20, but perennial meaning plant it one time and it's always going to come back.
So you can plant it around here, but what will do any good? I mean, do we have enough monarch butterflies that will be attracted to it?
You know, there are a lot of websites that people that are interested in can go on, and they're tracking websites where people can report when they see hummingbirds, for example, no different from monarch butterflies. So I would be curious to know the numbers, but it wouldn't hurt to plant milkweed, such an easy plant. And it's so crucial because it's a host plant. And that means that it is exclusively the one plant that the monarch caterpillar eats the leaves from.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up next on our Sunday edition of Atlanta's Morning News.
First Lady Jill Biden credits a summer program in Georgia for helping kids catch up after the pandemic. IWSB's Sandra Parrish.
Stay with us. This is Atlanta's Morning News Sunday edition. I'm Scott Slade. Despite her husband having COVID, First Lady Jill Biden kept her scheduled visit to the University of Georgia in Athens this past week. WSB's Sandra Parrish reports it was part of a three-state tour highlighting summer learning programs that are helping kids who've fallen behind due to COVID.
Wearing her mask, First Lady Jill Biden spoke to parents at UGA's Ramsey Student Center where their kids were getting ready for their swimming lessons. As a college professor, she's seen firsthand how the pandemic has led to students falling behind academically.
I saw how hard it was for my students, you know, to keep them going and keep their attention. And you parents are the ones who were the ones at home trying to keep your kids on schedule and doing their homework. And it was a really rough time, I think.
She's been visiting summer programs like this one, funded through her husband's American Rescue Plan, that are helping kids who have struggled due to the pandemic.
A lot of students hadn't been around anybody, you know, for a long time. And so they suffered, like they didn't know quite how to interact with one another. And I think that it was really hard for our children academically and emotionally.
That's where Horizons Atlanta comes in. The nonprofit launched in Georgia in 1999, aimed at helping students in grades 1st through 8th catch up during the summer.
Our model takes a host institution site and then looks for the closest Title I public school or schools that then become the source of our applicants and then enrollment.
Executive Director Alex Wan says the University of Georgia, the newest of the 10 host sites, is helping 1st and 2nd graders who attend Barnett Shoals Elementary in Athens.
We're focused around literacy, mathematics, and swimming. We have a lot of great data in terms of our impact, what we're able to do in terms of turning around students.
He says swimming lessons play a vital role in the program.
In the communities that we serve have higher drowning rates for their kids because they just either don't have access to swim lessons or even swim facilities. So it's a life-saving skill for one, but it's also a confidence-building activity. You know, students learn to face any sort of fears or trepidations they have about swimming.
Something Dr. Biden agrees with.
Whether it's math or whether it's English or history or swimming, it doesn't matter. Confidence is the most important thing, that they feel good about themselves.
I like it because it's more like an extended learning period between the end of the last school year, the beginning of the new school year.
Casey Thrasher's son is a rising second grader.
Noah comes home excited every day about what he's done here at Horizon, especially with the swim lessons, but not only that, the different experiments that they do, the science experiments that they do, the different trips that they take around the campus, so he loves it.
And she has a rising kindergartner who's hoping he gets a turn next summer. Sandra Parrish, 95.5 WSB.
Our Sunday roundtable is coming up next. We'll begin with just how big an issue abortion could be in our upcoming election. Stay with us. Atlanta's Morning News Sunday edition continues, and it's time for a Sunday roundtable. Joining us is WSB political analyst Bill Crane from CSI Crane. You see his weekly vlog and blog on WSBRadio.com. And Atlanta Journal-Constitution political reporter Greg Bluestein. You see his stuff on AJC.com as well as his Politically Georgia podcast. And Greg's book is Flipped, How Georgia Turned Purple. Hey, guys, good to be with you again.
Good morning, sir.
Let's dig into one of the bigger stories that popped, and if anything, it happened suddenly. The appeals court allowing Georgia's more restrictive abortion law to go into effect. And, well, if you could pick two distinct sides of the issue, you'd have to talk to Governor Brian Kemp and Democratic gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams, who had a very different tone and very different reactions.
We are overjoyed that the court has paved the way for the implementation of Georgia's Life Act. And as mothers navigate pregnancy, birth, parenthood, or alternative options to parenthood, like adoption, Georgia's public, private, and nonprofit sector stand ready to provide the resources they need to be safe, healthy, and informed.
And Stacey Abrams?
I'm not certain if the governor failed biology or simply failed morality, but either way, this law is wrong and it must be struck down, and I will be the governor to repeal it.
Greg Bluestein, how does this transcend now to a major campaign issue, or does it?
Well, it will, but will it be the biggest issue? Probably not. Polls still show that the economy, rising inflation, high energy prices, all that is still the number one issue. But abortion is usually around 10 to 20% of voters' top issues, so it'll certainly play a factor. Although you just heard Governor Kemp say he was overjoyed, it was sort of a muted victory lap. I mean, he doesn't want to draw too much attention to this. This, of course, is a huge victory for anti-abortion advocates and lawmakers who have long fought for abortion restrictions. But at the same time, he doesn't want to distract attention away from what he thinks is his best argument, which is the economy. Whereas Stacey Abrams and Democrats, you know, and of course, they're leaning into economic issues as well, but they think this will energize, mobilize, galvanize Democratic voters who might be disenchanted with President Joe Biden, disenchanted with the state of politics today. She thinks this will get them mobilized to go vote in November.
Bill, your thoughts. What do you think?
Well, among single-issue voters, this is the issue. As Greg pointed out, it's not the economy or something that's affecting everyone, but this gets a broad swath of the population, and it particularly impacts women, suburban women, who the GOP need to bring back into their column to be victorious statewide. But these laws are coming into effect all over the country. There are now 14 states that soon, depending on the final stages of court review of their own statutes, will have complete prohibition on abortion. Georgia is not one of those states. Georgia has a heartbeat requirement that if you have a fetal heartbeat at 6 weeks, you can't have an abortion after that, and with the exception of rape, incest, threat to life of mother. Mm-hmm. But it will play heavy, and as you heard in Stacey Abrams' sound cut, it will be emotional. Emotional can, social issues can, Trump economic ones, but the economy is doing so well with unemployment going down statewide to 3%, released earlier this week, even with COVID kind of still resurgent somewhat in the background. If the governor had the authority to get gas prices under control, his economic argument would almost be bulletproof.
Yeah. And of course, people who are inside this know very well, Greg, that while Stacey Abrams can promise to work to repeal the abortion law, it's not up to her. Is there any chance that the Georgia General Assembly would flip and help her out?
Yeah, that's a very good point, Scott, because, look, I mean, Republicans just control redistricting. And they drew the lines of the state legislative districts to remain in Republican hands. So unless there's some unforeseen tidal wave that supports Democrats, which is very, very, very unlikely, Republicans will maintain control of the Georgia legislature. And this is not a debate that many Republicans, even those who voted against the abortion restrictions or who took a walk on the vote, this is not something that they want to revisit. So I asked Stacey Abrams about that pretty much every time the topic comes up, and I ask in different ways, and she essentially says there'll be a movement, there'll be an outpouring that will even kind of shake the foundations of the state legislature. But again, you know, that seems very, very unlikely.
And Bill, there seem to be very safe Republican margins still in the state House and Senate, aren't there?
True, but I do think, depending on the margins in the fall, the GOP is victorious and holds on to most constitutional offices. They, I don't think, are any doubt to hang on to control of both chambers of the General Assembly. I wouldn't be surprised to see a smaller number of GOP legislators get prescriptive an amendment to the heartbeat bill and go back in and be more clear on certain questionable procedures that are needed for aborting a pregnancy that are medically, you know, medical abortion is still legal, but, you know, explaining that more prescriptively, what medications are allowed to induce. And for those who have to have DNCs and other procedures, there's a lot of chatter on social media that all of that, as well as ectopic pregnancies, are abortions. They're not, and they could perhaps be more clear in the statute.
Well, and there's a whole other topic, too, is the personhood provisions in the
legislation. Right, that was their whole court argument.
Yeah,
which is an entirely different subject. And, you know, just to boil it down, there's a lot of legal questions pertaining around that lawmakers could revisit. It's opening a whole thorny box, though. It's going to be really hard to revisit it. But if they do, there'll be a lot of questions, including, you know, child support questions. Does child support begin at, you know, a certain threshold of pregnancy? You know, legal questions, liability questions, all sorts of other sort of, I don't even call them spinoff questions, but very important questions that go along with this whole personhood debate.
We touched on the gubernatorial campaign just a moment ago. Let's move on to the Senate campaign between Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock. Greg, are we any closer to a debate date between those two candidates? And what are you seeing from the Walker campaign? Maybe some retooling?
Yeah, Scott, you might have to come in and mediate the debate issue because both campaigns are not there yet. I mean, Raphael Warnock, Senator Warnock, has said that he's open to several debate dates. Herschel Walker has not agreed to it yet. He says he's ready and willing to debate, but he hasn't agreed to it yet. But in a bigger, broader sense, Herschel Walker, we are seeing a more open Herschel Walker. You know, we've talked so much about the campaign controversies he's faced, the issues he's faced, the private closed-door events he's held, barring the media and barring the public. Well, you know, he has a new campaign team. He's revamped his campaign. He's added a lot more staff. He's scaled up significantly. And could we be seeing sort of a reset? We'll find out. But I can tell you, at least in the last few days, there's been more public events and more opportunities for folks to question him in person.
Would Herschel Walker be smart not to debate Bill Crane? Does that wind up really hurting him in the end?
I wouldn't be looking to do a series of debates, but I think he sort of has to do one. Now, even if he doesn't debate at all, the bulk of his supporters will be with him. But winning an election is not about bringing in your base. Winning an election is getting those undecided independent swing voters in the middle. I think to get them, he's got to convince them. He has the gravitas, he has the smarts, and the ability to lead, or at least to have a very good staff around him. And that's going to require at least one debate and a cogent performance.
Now that the January 6th committee has held their last public hearing for a while, attention will now come to the Fulton County Courthouse on issues still revolving around the 2020 election. And Greg, the Fulton County Judge Robert McBurney has ruled that 11 of those 16 alternate Republican electors will need to honor Fani Willis's subpoena. Will that include Burt Jones?
Well, that's a side story, but yes, it could. Scott, this just tells you how busy this week was in Georgia politics.
Yeah.
And really this whole year has been, because any other week this would have been the lead story. I mean, the lieutenant governor, the Republican nominee for lieutenant governor, could face criminal charges for his role in the sham elector scheme, according to the Fulton County District Attorney's Office. And, you know, a judge ruled that 11 of the 16 electors do have to testify. We're not sure about where four of them stand because they haven't made arguments saying they shouldn't have to testify. But Burt Jones sort of stands apart. The state senator says that he's willing to testify, but he won't do it if it involves Fulton District Attorney Fannie Willis, because he feels like she has a conflict of interest because she hosted a fundraiser for his opponent, Charlie Bailey. So that's still being hashed out as we speak.
Yeah. Bill, bring us up to speed on your field trip this past week to the Rivian plant in Normal, Illinois. What were your impressions?
Well, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar, Rivian is an electric automobile and truck manufacturer. They're headquartered in Plymouth, Michigan, but their only existing manufacturing facility is in Normal, Illinois, and it's a twin city with Bloomington, Illinois. I'd never been to either and got invited to attend, and I just got to say, as a skeptic of electric vehicles in general, the technology is amazing, and won't bore our listeners with stuff I can't show video of, but at one point we were climbing a near vertical rock hill that felt like the tires of the truck were Spider-Man pulling us up by hand, but it didn't hesitate. It didn't slip. And then on the other side of the hill, which was sand, we went down, and then they put it in reverse and backed up the sand hill. The truck has four individual motors, one on each tire, that do operate independently of each other, as well as when you're going 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. It's an incredible piece of technology. And that company is attempting to build a plant on 2,000 acres at Stanton Springs, about an hour east of Atlanta. And I think one of the reasons, of course, we were invited is there's been some community resistance, particularly in the communities of Rutledge and a small number of voters in Madison and Morgan County, Madison, Georgia, and Morgan County, and trying to show them what the product is. The truck has been here before. I think Greg attended a press conference they had at Liberty Plaza across from the state capitol, but you'll be seeing more Rivians here and sort of touch a truck events as the groundbreaking for the plant gets closer.
Hey, Greg, you think this is Rivian's attempt to show the media and the folks in Georgia that they actually do have their act together?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they didn't seem to have a concerted effort to push back earlier on amidst the community outpouring of angst over this new factory, which would be one of the biggest, employers in Georgia, and also one of the biggest state incentives bounties in the state's history. And so, look, you know, I don't think anyone expected it to become a political issue the way it did, with David Perdue rallying against the incentive package that the state offered to help lure Rivian. But of course, that area of Georgia, along with the rest of the state, went overwhelmingly to Brian Kemp in the primary. So it shows you just how effective those arguments might have been. And look, they have work to do with lawmakers. They have work to do with the residents. But it sounds like they're starting to do that work.
And Greg, here we have a sitting president that's being diagnosed with COVID. And well, the last time that happened a couple of years ago, it was pretty dicey. Well, now not so much, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, now vaccines and boosters, and of course the president has been fully boosted and vaccinated. The symptoms are mild, but still it underscores the fact that this pandemic is not, we're not out of the woods yet. There's another wave underway, and we'll be watching to see, what other safety precautions that government and local officials instruct us to take.
I have family members who've caught this more recent variant, and it's pretty tough on them. And even them, all of them who had vaccines and boosters, it gave them a wallet. And they say that they're going to expedite sequencing to see which of the variants he has, and maybe he'll be back on the job in 5 days. But I'll just say it again: I wouldn't necessarily swallow the White House pablum that everything's okie dokie and he's got a very mild symptoms. We don't know yet.
Okay, guys, let's look ahead to the coming week. Greg Bluestein, what's on your plate?
Well, it's going to be another busy week. We're still going to see how doctors, healthcare providers, and others adapt to the new legal regime surrounding anti-abortion restrictions in Georgia. Because, as we said, this wasn't a surprise, but it was so sudden when it took effect. I mean, people, were literally turned away, or their appointments were canceled at abortion clinics around Georgia, and so. Doctors and others are adapting to this new reality.
And local district attorneys, several of them going on the record saying they don't intend to prosecute any cases under the new law. That could be a twist.
Yeah, more than half a dozen have said that. Others are saying they'll take it by case-by-case scenario. And we've got local officials, law enforcement officials, mayors, who are saying that they're going to deprioritize enforcement of these restrictions. So the next battleground is in the local level right now over abortion restrictions.
Well said. Bill Crane, looking ahead, your last word to you.
Protests and the nearest state with very few or lesser abortion conditions and regulations would be Maryland, and North Carolina and Virginia have statutes pending. And I will mention that the Aflac Cancer Center Carathon, hosted by WSB Radio, will be this time next week, and we won't be on. And I want to go ahead and give your listeners a chance, knowing how generous they are, to get geared up to once again help us raise somewhere north of $1 million, maybe closer to $2 million, on behalf of the Aflac Cancer Center for Pediatric Cancer Research and Therapies, and help for families whose children are in fighting those battles.
It's an amazing success story. I'm so glad you mentioned that. We had Dr. Doug Graham on earlier. Yeah. Their 15-story research building is about to open on the Emory campus this October, and they are attracting even more world-class talent to fight these diseases. I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you. Thank you very much, guys. Have a great week.
Have a good one.
You too.
And finally, in our Sunday edition of Atlanta's Morning News, it's been 9 years since a local college student was nearly killed by a hit-and-run driver. We've updated Emily Bowman's heroic effort to recover in the past, and now, at 29 years old, she's graduated from college. Channel 2's Barrett Peterson from Kennesaw State University. She's come a long way.
Yeah, and right now she's taking a well-earned break after 4 years on this campus, but Emily Bowman plans to press on. Emily Bowman is the type of person who finishes what she starts.
When I heard my name, it was like, yeah, it's my turn. They need me.
Emily has spent the last 4 years at Kennesaw State University's Academy for Inclusive Learning and Social Growth.
The academy here is wonderful. They're like family, and they truly care.
The goal is to help students with different developmental abilities. Channel 2 first introduced you to Emily in 2013, during the most tragic of times. She was seriously hurt by a hit-and-run DUI driver. She was 19 then, a sophomore in college. Over the next few years, she learned how to walk again, how to talk again, and doing what she loves, going to a Braves game, posing with her friends in front of her miracle brick outside the stadium. And a few weeks back, she accomplished the goal she set right after high school. She completed her college education. She finishes what she starts.
Just try hard to keep going after and get what you want to get done.
Now, Emily has attended many events hosted by Mothers Against Drunk Driving. She speaks at those, in fact, so she and her mom think motivational speaking may now be her calling.
Thanks, Bernd. And thank you for joining us for our Sunday edition of Atlanta's Morning News. I'm Scott Slade. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning on 95.5 WSB.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.